You can get all of our catalogs on a CD. That's easiest for send it out. Or we'll send you the printed one, the regular catalog, the health catalog, and the emergency food catalog. But do not put it off, because tomorrow could be too late.
Now you can upgrade your existing gravity filter to remove chemicals such as trimethylenes, atrazine, benzene, chlorine, chloroform, and MTBE to below detectable limits. Black Berkey elements are so powerful, they remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and transform water, even raw, stagnant pond water, into delicious, crystal clear drinking water. Nitrates, nitrites, radon 222, unwanted heavy metals like lead, mercury, and aluminum are no problem. Foul tastes like chlorine and obnoxious sulfur odors are removed without removing the healthful and beneficial minerals that your body needs. Black Berkey elements flow 1.5 to 2 times faster than ordinary gravity elements, which means it takes much less time to filter your water. Supercharge your gravity filter today. Upgrade to Black Berkey purification elements.
Get a 2-pack, only $99, or a 4-pack, only $188. Call New Millennium, 888-803-44.
Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, they're going to be very, very shortly the views of Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief, who certainly has all sorts of connections. He has was with intelligence when he was in the military. And, of course, the information, though, that we have today is based upon the information that's available in the news, and his interpretation of it. And so this is nothing that you're going to get at the present time that comes from classified documents at all, unless they've been released. But Joel has certainly an excellent overview of what's going on. It's always a pleasure to have Joel Skousen with us as a guest. Hi, Joel. How are we doing?
Fine. Thank you, Dr. Stan. It's good to be with you today.
Well, what do we have? What are we going to be talking about this afternoon?
Well, first order of business is the now-revealed secret executive order signed by Bush authorizing torture, and this apparently predates al-Ghraib, which in the prison torture, and lets us know that, in fact, it was Bush at the very top who authorized this. The executive order signed by Bush, you know, could lead to his being prosecuted under international law for violations of human rights under the Geneva Convention, and that's why this secret executive order is still classified and not available for public scrutiny, and I don't believe it ever will be.
But hasn't there some FBI emails and other things come forward?
That's correct.
Right.
It's an FBI email that has surfaced indicating that this executive order exists and expressing the opinion that agents should not follow its direction, being highly illegal. And this is what makes it... and, of course, the Bush administration came out and vehemently denied there was any such order. You know, it just shows you, Dr. Stan, you know, for a supposedly conservative Christian administration, they've just been guilty of so many outright lies. And, of course, every time you hear about the kind of language that goes on in the White House and the snickers that go on about how foolish the Christian leaders are who come to pay homage to Bush at the prayer breakfast at the White House, you know, this is just one huge bit of hypocrisy.
I agree with you, but I really honestly believe that George Bush was elected in 2004 over John Kerry, who I honestly believe got the election, and I don't like him at all, but I think George Bush was left in there because he would discredit Christianity, he would discredit the Republican Party, and of course he would turn the whole world against America, because throughout the rest of the world they know hypocrisy and they know that we are torturing the prisoners that we're capturing, we are violating the Geneva Covenant, and of course the Geneva Convention. And I mean, people at one time used to look to America, and really they wanted to be like America. And I think throughout most of the world today, people really are turning against this country. And at a time in the very near future when we're going to need all the friends we can get, well, I don't think we're going to have any. Go right ahead.
Well, you know, the trouble is this executive order is so specific in what it authorizes and what it clearly, that it clearly puts the president's signature on the line for authorizing things labeled as torture under international law. And, you know, these other nations, even though they are, you know, the people criticize the United States, we found out now their governments all playing along with the United States. Everyone from Germany to France to Italy and Spain, all part of the package.
And, of course, that's because the CIA is working in all of those countries and other intelligence agencies to make sure the candidates that we want get elected, not the candidates that people want. But, of course, America is really controlling the world through our empire. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. And even though most people haven't heard about it recently, it's been revealed that there was a White House executive order allowing torture. And, of course, this is known because there was emails that have surfaced from the FBI. And the FBI people said, look, this executive order has been passed allowing torture, and you should not engage in it because it is illegal. But that really didn't matter to the White House. They're denying, of course, the executive order exists, and yet we know that they have authorized torture. Torture has been used in horrible ways. And those of you who haven't read General Taguba's report of what happened at Abu Ghraib prison, it's up on the Internet. If not, you can get it through Radio Liberty. We haven't rebound it. But, I mean, the horrible, inhuman things that were done by American soldiers under orders. At Abu Ghraib prison, discredit every American out there, and men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And where is the church, you know, saying this is wrong? Where are our Christian leaders saying this is wrong? Why, they're all rallying behind the President of the United States because he's a Christian and he's a Republican. And everybody knows that God's on the Republican side. Go right ahead, Joel.
Yes, one of the things that even bothers me about the Pope's visit is, you know, if you were really a leader who was interested in human rights, as the hierarchy of the Catholic Church claims, you wouldn't give honors to Bush by your presence and let him take advantage of that in the press, as they certainly have been doing. So there's kind of a mutual don't ask, don't tell within international community. It even extends to religious leaders.
Well, of course, not only that, but certainly our president, in fact, our entire nation should boycott the Olympics that are going to be held in China. People say, oh, well, this is about athletes, nothing about politics. Well, they seem to have a very, very short memory. They don't remember what happened to South Africa, how we would not allow South African, athletes to compete because, of course, of the apartheid situation in South Africa, which was nothing compared with the oppression of the people in communist China, which incidentally is largely financed with money from the American taxpayers. But go right ahead.
Well, Jason Leopold of the Online Journal had the best summaries, I think, of the actual FBI memos and the White House reaction to it. He said that President Bush's comment to ABC News showed that he was basically forced to admit, in fact, that he had approved discussions that his top aides had held about harsh interrogation techniques. Now, that's the euphemism, of course, that they use for torture.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Joel Skousen of World Affairs Brief. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Joel was just saying that when President Bush was questioned about this, he admitted that he knew that his aides had been talking about harsh interrogation techniques, which is simply a euphemism for torture. And he knew they were going to be torturing, and And what did he do to step in? He got up and he told the American people, we would never authorize torture. We would never authorize torture. And he knew that authorized torture, just as he knew there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. But he couldn't tell the American people that. How could you possibly tell the American people the truth? Go right ahead.
Well, you know, the White House, of course, has emphatically denied that any such presidential order existed, and they're still denying that. They're saying that the unnamed FBI official who wrote the email was mistaken. Well, you know, Bush and his representatives may deny that they are condoning torture, but that's exactly what happens. The memo talks about some of the specifics that are in the authorization, such as waterboarding, which everyone calls simulated drowning. It's not simulated at all. It's actual drowning that's done slow enough to allow a small fraction of time for the subject to relent before dying. But it is drowning, and it is torture, and one of the worst of the tortures. This is the famous water torture that's been around for years, decades, and even centuries. And, of course, the emerging public evidence suggests that the Bush denials about torture amount to semantic argument, with the public or the administration applying a very narrow definition of what contradicts widely accepted standards in international law, including the Geneva and other human rights conventions, which the U.S. is signatory to. The FBI email is dated May 22, 2004, and it followed disclosures about abuse of Iraqi detainees at Abu Ghraib prison, and it sought guidance on whether the FBI agents in Iraq were obligated to report the U.S. military's harsh interrogation techniques. And, of course, the administration, just like it is for the telephone company, is saying, no, this is legal, and therefore, you don't have to report this. And according to the email, Bush's executive order authorized interrogators to use military dogs, stress positions, sleep management, another euphemism for sleep denial. That's a specific listed torture in the Geneva Convention. Loud rock music, sensory deprivation through the use of hoods. And the FBI email was put into new light, of course, by news reports last week that senior White House officials, including Vice President Dick Cheney and then security advisor Condoleezza Rice, did meet secretly to discuss specific interrogation methods that could be used against detainees. Now, remember, in all of the prosecutions, there's been no high-ranking officer prosecuted for the Abu Ghraib prison. Now we have open admissions that, in fact, they discussed these things prior to Abu Ghraib taking, and yet there's going to be no prosecutions of these or impeachments of these high-ranking leaders. The memo says the most senior Bush administration officials repeatedly discussed and approved specific details of exactly how high-value al-Qaeda suspects would be interrogated by the CIA. And were so detailed, these sources said, that some of the interrogation sessions were almost choreographed, down to the number of times CIA agents could use a specific tactic. Last Friday, President Bush confirmed the report, stating, matter-of-factly, without any remorse, I'm aware of our national security team met on this issue, and I approved. I mean, this is just ludicrous that there is an outrage in the press, if there isn't, and within Congress.
But the thing that bothers me most, why aren't our religious leaders speaking out about this? And the thing is that most of them, well, they're 501c3. They have far more fear of government than they have of God. And I think that they're going to have to stand one day before God and say, well, why didn't you speak out? And, well, I couldn't, really. I didn't want to be controversial. I didn't want to get people mad. I mean, religious leaders are supposed to be, the conscience of our nation. At one time they were, but no longer.
Well, you know, even with the 501c3, the only specific prohibition is against coming to bear on either candidates or issues before an elected body, specifically lobbying for a candidate for office or a specific legislative. There is nothing that prohibits you to come out on a moral issue or anything that has a moral implication and decrying in general, as long as it's not specifically referring to it. So that's a cop-out that they really can't speak out. Yeah. Because of the 501c3. I know they use that as an excuse often, but it isn't valid, and they could do a lot more on the basis of commenting on moral principles.
In fact, it was very interesting. It was John McCain was interviewed on, I believe, on 60 Minutes, And he was asked, is waterboarding torture? And he said, of course. Of course it's torture. And they said, well, then why are we using it? And John McCain said, after slight hesitation, because we've lost our way. And I really think John McCain is not one of my favorite people, but I think he was absolutely right. And he said that with all sincerity, because America has lost its way.
Yeah, but he wouldn't stop it, of course. If he were president, he'd go right along. And, you know, it's one thing to take a position verbally. It's another thing to actually set about to stop some of these things. And only Ron Paul would have done that. Now, the FBI email stated that FBI interrogation teams in Iraq understood that despite the revisions in the executive order that occurred after the Fuhrer, so notice there's an admission there that the executive order preceded Abu Ghraib. That means that they were authorized at the very highest levels, including the president himself, and he should be brought to task. This is an impeachable offense. But the president sanctioning harsh interrogating or torture had not been rescinded, according to as of 2004. The email said, I have been told that all interrogation techniques previously authorized by the executive order are still on the table, but that certain techniques can only be used if high-level authority is granted. Now, that also is proof that the responsibility for these tortures go to the highest levels of government. And of course, the memo said, which was very courageous, we have also instructed our personnel not to participate in interrogations by military personnel, which might include these techniques authorized by this executive order, which are beyond the bounds of FBI practices.
Well, you know, of course, if you've read General Lacuba's report to Cuba, now he was the highest-ranking Filipino officer. He was a major general. And he was asked to actually investigate what went on at Abu Ghraib, and he was told that if he told the truth, it would end his career. And he told the truth. And one of the things that they did, and this is in the report, we have it, they would put electric wires onto the genitalia of the people, and then they would stimulate them into agonizing pain. This is the sort of thing that, you know, would make what Torquemada had done during the Catholic Inquisition fade into. They didn't have electricity at that time. I'm sure they would have used it. And American personnel did this under instructions and under orders specifically to do that. Not a word of that, of course, in the regular media. And I think it reflects the media cover-up of this. But the question is, what's happened to the soul of America? And General Tugub, of course, after he had prepared his report, he had told the truth. After being warned he should not tell the truth, he did tell the truth. And he was ordered then, of course, to resign his commission. However, he did tell the whole story in an article in the New Yorker magazine written by Seymour Hersh, and we have that article available. And, of course, it was General Tugube's opinion, although he was not asked to investigate where this all started. He said he thought it went right to the White House itself. Of course, this was
absolutely
after he had
true.
Been forced out of the military. Forced to resign for telling the truth. Boy, what does that say about the American military? We've had a lot of brave and courageous people on our military who are being forced to compromise everything they believe in by orders from above.
Well, you know, the rest of the Cheney team, Bush-Cheney team, will be forever looking over their shoulders as human rights activists try to get European governments to arrest them if they go to Europe. Now, just as former Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld had to make a quick exit from France based upon a warrant for his arrest for international war crimes. But sadly, all European governments are complicit in this globalist agenda and will protect these people. And while they play, the European governments are particularly adept at playing both sides, left and right, you know, claiming like they're against the United States, they'll ultimately use their intelligence services to tip off high-level government agents and scurry them out of the country if they get threatened with arrest. So I don't expect to see any of these people see jail time over these horrible crimes that they have authorized.
Well, the same thing is true with Henry Kissinger, of course. They want him for being involved with many of the revolutions in South America
that
where people were killed. Large numbers of people were killed with Henry Kissinger's support and authorization. But, of course, Henry Kissinger is never punished for his crimes.
Well, the next subject is the Colombian Free Trade Agreement, which is getting a lot of press. It really isn't about free trade. Cliff Kincaid, writing with newswithviews.com, correctly noted what I have been saying and agreed with me that I've been saying for a long time. Free trade agreements are not about free trade, but all about creating legal structures that are leading to regional and world government. he says the White House, of course, wants a quick vote in favor of the U.S.-Colombia Free Trade Promotion Agreement. The name was just recently changed to the U.S.-Colombia Free Trade Agreement. Whatever they call it, however, he says a free trade agreement isn't necessary to accomplish any of these worthwhile objectives. In fact, it is a major distraction. We shouldn't be pretending that we can fight Colombia's communist drug-dealing terrorists or Hugo Chavez with trade agreements. You know, these claims, of course, by the administration are made because they provide superficial popular justifications while creating cover for the real agenda, which is destroying national sovereignty. Kincaid says correctly, you don't have to read past the preamble to see it puts the U.S. further down the road to sovereignty-destroying hemispheric integration.
That's right, and we're really talking about the destruction of American sovereignty because our leaders don't believe in America. They want, of course, to unite, of course, all of the governments here in the Western Hemisphere, do away with the Constitution, and certainly merge all of the countries together, and we'll have then the same freedom that they have in Colombia or in Mexico.
Or lack thereof.
Right.
Well, I say that with tongue in cheek. It's about the practical aspects of world government. Even if you did world government on the same federalist principle that the Republic of the United States was established with guarantees of human rights, even if you did that, it would be very difficult to handle because of the cost of traveling to the center of government to defend yourself and me.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. All right, go right ahead, Joel.
So what I'm saying is that even under proper principles, there's nothing in principle wrong with having a world government any more than there is wrong with having a federal government. There are dangers, however, if you don't structure it correctly so that you maintain, first and foremost, the right of people to withdraw should it become tyrannical. We lost that right during the Civil War, and that was one of the greatest unfortunate things about the Civil War is that it destroyed the right of secession. And that should have been an eternal right. We're no better than the Soviet Union if states cannot pull out of the Union if it should become tyrannical as we pulled out away from Britain. But these organizations that they're knitting together, of course, allow major decisions to be made on behalf of the member countries by a small elite clique of people who control these governments. And that's what it's all about, control.
But, of course, Joel, if we went into a world government, we would have to renounce our Constitution. And we have really the most perfect form of government ever conceived of by man. And we're going to have to give that up to go into a world government because the world government's not going to have a system where the power of the state is limited over the lives of the people. In almost every other state, why, of course, the power of government is used to oppress and control the people, as increasingly is happening here. But we still have the... At least we have this framework of our Constitution. I would hate to give that up just in the name of establishing a world government.
Well, actually, we would have to do a lot of work on our own Constitution to put into much tighter legal language the wonderful principles that were enshrined in the Constitution. They've driven trucks through the loopholes in the language of the Constitution, and it really needs to be tightened up, especially the definition of fundamental rights, so it cannot be interpreted by the courts to allow a right to abortion and other things that they have designed to do. It's very important to have definitions, and it needs to be much longer and much more carefully written. It's the best that the founders could do, given the fact that if they had any more specific restrictions, of course, it would have impinged upon slavery, and they wouldn't have got any of the states to agree to the Constitution. So that was one of the major bad compromises that they made in the Bill of Rights, not applying it to the states, and the states were the first to begin to infringe upon individual liberties and business liberties and create state churches and other things that infringed upon people's freedom of worship. And that's what induced many people to call to the federal government to take more power, to challenge the states, and who were not bound by the Bill of Rights. And even the Bill of Rights, as good as they are, still aren't good enough in my book. I have a series of essays written on my website, joelskousen.com, under the section of Law and Government, which explains how to do the Constitution in tight legal language so that it can't be, and it would not allow for the kind of socialism that the Supreme Court has allowed to be interpreted in our Constitution.
But of course it wasn't there at all. It was simply we had people in the Supreme Court who had a different agenda, who wanted to destroy the religious beliefs of our country, who wanted to centralize all power in Washington, D.C. It wasn't the Constitution that was at fault. It was the Supreme Court justices.
But it was to a certain extent, Dr. Stan, in the sense that the language was not specific enough to prohibit it. You know, and the Anti-Federalists were right.
Well,
they were right that they correctly saw that you need more language to specifically prohibit, and the Federalists relied upon it. Well, we haven't authorized it, and so it can't be done. But all you look is the general language, and I mean to take the preamble
and talk about
general welfare, and then over 100 years you start to interpret that as welfareism rather than
we're bringing our stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Joel Skousen, and we're certainly talking about the Columbia Free Trade Agreement that the president wants to get through. So, and of course, the whole issue is basically this: the sovereignty of the United States. Are we going to simply surrender our sovereignty in the name of free trade organizations, which will give a supranational bureaucracy the ability to tell our country what we'll do? Just as recently we saw the country of Mexico demanding that Mexican murderers have been tried and convicted and were condemned to death. Oh, well, of course, they wanted to go to a world court that said that, you know, the United States doesn't have the right to put Mexicans to death because Mexico itself doesn't agree with the death penalty. And yet, of course, Texas does. And they were condemned in Texas to the credit of the Supreme Court. Apparently, they have decided that the world court has no control over what happens in our country, and I was very, very proud of Justice Roberts on that. But you go ahead and pick up the story there, Joe.
Yes. My major point about the weakness of the Constitution is that were we to even take the document as written and have it installed in a world government scenario, you would carry along with that automatically all the court interpretations that have diminished the Constitution. And that's why it isn't sufficient anymore to rely. In the first place, the Constitution has had to be expanded to cover many normal areas that were not even relied upon in the Constitution or envisioned, whether it's business law and bankruptcy law and many of those other types of things. And so I'm saying that what you would have to do, and the easiest way to do it is if people go to my law and government section on joelskousen.com and read my revised Constitution that I've actually written, putting into tight legal language the same principles of the founders, and you look at the two documents and say, all right, which one could you get away with? And immediately it becomes obvious. No, it states that you cannot do this. You cannot do this in a tight legal language document. So conservatives have to be careful not to have such allegiance to the Constitution. It was a very real compromise. It's the best they could do at the time. And while it has universal principles that don't need to be updated, they do need to be put in tight legal language, because without it, you're stuck with the legal language that the legal community has already created, which they all believe, at least 99% of the entire legal and judicial and legislative community believes, it's part of the Constitution.
But that is because the legal community has never read the Constitution or read the 10th Amendment that says very specifically, the power is not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. And we have...
That's right, but notice, Dr. Stan, even that's not good enough, because the states left nothing to the people. And there are many things that the states are just as tyrannical about implementing against people, including tax-provided public schools, which have denied all of us the right to take our money elsewhere as the government schools. That's a perfect example of oppression by the states. Nothing was left over for the people, and a properly written document would state specifically what no government, whether local, state, or federal, or world, can take away from the individual.
Well, of course, if you dump our Constitution, we have no country at all, Joe. And because we cannot, if we simply turn our back on the Constitution, we're not going to have a chance to write another one. And believe me, the other side already has a new Constitution, and it will certainly bring all tyranny. Yes, there is injustice in our states. There's injustice in California. This is because the good people aren't involved, because the Christians aren't involved, because the Christian leaders aren't involved, and of course because we're not involved while the other side has taken over. But we have injustice in our states because the good people are not doing things. We have allowed radicals to take over control of our state legislature, both the Assembly and both the Senate. And of course, the man we have as a governor today is really put there by the establishment that you and I both oppose. But this has happened because the good people have done nothing.
Well, all of us who do know these things, of course, have not done it. We've been outvoted every time. And we will continue to be outvoted. Tom DeWeese wrote a very well-intentioned article about the conservative movement. Where do we go to here? And about the concept that, we have to win this battle at the individual level. But he fails to discuss the point that we just don't have enough people who are understanding of these things or willing to take a stand or even willing to get educated to make a difference at the individual level.
Well, I think before this coming financial collapse is over, we're either going to have a totalitarian dictatorship or there are going to be enough people who value freedom who get involved with this cause, this effort to recapture the freedoms that America once had. Well, it's going to be interesting to see. We're heading into a real difficult financial situation. The average American doesn't understand. We're not going to be in a recession for a few months. We're going to be in a depression that may last very well for many, many years. And most of what we have physically and materially is going to be lost before this is over. Well, Joel, you go right ahead.
Well, my feeling is, and I know we've discussed this before, is that in fact this will not lead to a major depression. There is every single sign, 100% of the signs indicate this government is going to inflate their way into another bubble yet and not allow this to go into depression. So the problem will be severe inflation, and of course that will be depression to those who cannot raise their wages or their income fast enough to deal with it. Collective depression, if you will, upon those that are stuck under the inflation tax. But it's not the kind of depression that we saw in 1939, in my opinion. And the reason I strongly believe that, the powers that be do not want the people to get upset. They know very well that people could turn against the government and would do so if there were severe financial problems. And they have, of course, ways to put up candidates that will pretend to do the right thing and reform them, but they will never allow someone like Ron Paul to get it elected. The turnaround in Italy in 1992 is just very, very instructive, and it's too bad most Americans don't know about this, but they threw the whole government out when it was found that every political party was in bed with the mafia taking bribes and kickbacks for government contracts. And they threw everybody out, and within 6 months, they had reformed into new parties with different names and different figureheads, and they were all back in office again, all claiming to be against the corruption. So, it takes some real sophistication, I'm afraid, to see through these wolves in sheep's clothing who are doing this. And this, frankly, is a sad commentary on the state of affairs of conscience of the nation, because God warns people in their conscience about truth and things that you cannot know or may not know from your senses when there is deception and other things like that. And the fact that people, so many of our Christian people, do not sense that anything's wrong, that cannot sense that George Bush and Dick Cheney are lying to them, is, in fact, a great curse upon this nation. And we'll be held responsible for our insensitivity to the promptings of God that would warn people and do, and obviously there's a small percentage that do get those warnings. You and I talk to them each day, and they're probably listening to this program.
I'm sure they are.
Majority of people don't.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment with Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief as we analyze what's going on, or as Joel analyzes the things that are going on today that really reflect very, very poorly on our nation. And certainly one of those is the fact that the leaders of our country really have no loyalty to our country at all. They want to bring about this one world government. And that's, of course, what all these trade agreements are really all about, stepping stones to a world government. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Joel Skousen. And before we go on, Joel, I do want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you and get a copy of your newsletter and perhaps want to subscribe to it.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. My newsletter is The World Affairs Brief, showcased on my website, www.worldaffairsbrief.com. And if people would like a sample copy of the World Affairs Brief, if they want to consider subscribing, it's a very modest fee to subscribe. But if they want a sample copy, they can email me at editor@worldaffairsbrief.com. If they forget how to do that, they can go to the website, and it tells them right there on the front page after the summary of the brief how to get a sample copy.
And, of course, it's an excellent, excellent analysis. Okay, where do we go from here?
Well, it's very interesting. You know, while the media personalities incessantly decry the baseless conspiracy theories every time civil libertarians point out increased government assaults on liberty and constitutional protections, new evidence surfaces every week to justify such concerns. Now we find out that the jury in a case in Pennsylvania was intimidated after acquitting a very hot political case. They were called up by the FBI and wanted to meet. The FBI wanted to meet with these people. This has a very chilling effect on juries. Journalist Paul Kyle of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review relates this latest jaw-dropping intrusion by the FBI. He said two jurors said Thursday that they were unnerved by FBI telephone requests for home visits to meet with them to explain why they deadlocked in the federal public corruption trial of Allegheny County Coroner Cyril Wecht.
Now, of course, is there any authorization for the FBI to come around and harass jurors after this? I mean, where does the FBI get off, you know, get being able to investigate the decision of a jury?
Well, this is a very, very good point. You're the only one who's, I've heard bring this up. The media certainly haven't. Experts said the practice of using FBI agents to contact and interview jurors after mistrials was unusual, and the U.S. attorney even called it commonplace. Well, this is baloney. The FBI has absolutely no jurisdiction to interview juries unless there's a grand jury probe involving jury tampering. Now, there was no such probe, no such authorization by a grand jury. These FBI agents were put upon these jurors, I believe, to intimidate them. And then a spokesman for the U.S. Attorney's Office trying to skirt around the legal issues came up with a lame excuse that the FBI agents were simply setting up appointments for the U.S. Attorney's Office to enter them. Sure, since when is the FBI paid to run the appointment calendar of U.S. attorneys? This is just ludicrous, Dr. Stan, but it is telling about the broad-ranging powers that government agents are getting involved in, intimidating those who dare, especially juries, who dare to disregard a juror's instruction and vote the law down as well as the points of facts. Another subject, of course, is that it appears that the Martial Law Act of 2006 is worse than previously thought. James Bovard of the Future of Freedom Foundation did an extensive analysis of this Bush administration assault on liberty, and I've quoted in the World Affairs Brief some extensive comments here. Now, martial law is the ultimate stomping ground of freedom, according to Bovard. Congress passed this provision in 2006. It's a 600-page bill that will allow make it easier for President Bush to impose martial law in response to a terrorist incident.
Now, are you speaking of the Military Commission Act? Are you speaking of the John Warner Defense Appropriations Act, or what?
Well, it's a combination here of what's being called the Martial Law Act, because both of those do impinge, and I'll explain this a little bit later.
I agree with you. I think those are frightening bits of legislation.
But put together, and that's what Bovard does, put together they have a very chilling effect because of the broad-ranging excuses. Let me read you what he's found on these. You know, they, of course, empower him to effectively declare martial law in response to what he or other federal officials label a shortfall of public order, you know, whatever that means. Well, obviously, a shortfall in public order, you can justify martial law anytime the government creates social unrest, which can easily happen by shutting down essential services in an emergency like Katrina. They created much of the problem that happened in Katrina, and then they had the excuse to declare martial law because of that. So, you know, in the Military Commissions Act, really does undo the Posse Comitatus Act of 1878, which tightened restrictions basically on the ability of the president to use the military in domestic riot situations, imposing a two-year sentence on anyone who used the military within the U.S. boundaries without the express permission of Congress. And, of course, the act was passed in 1878 after the depredations of the U.S. military throughout the southern states during Reconstruction. A lot of people don't realize that during Reconstruction, the South was terribly mistreated, not only with the carpetbaggers, but with martial law and U.S. soldiers essentially coming into homes and raping women and taking whatever they wanted and acting like this was a conquered country. Now, there was a loophole in the original 1878 Posse Comitatus Act, which waived the restrictions that the president invoked the Insurrection Act. Now, the Insurrection Act and the Posse Comitatus Act aimed to deter dictatorship while permitting a very narrow window for the president to temporarily use the military at home. But the only way that you could evade the Posse Comitatus Act was to declare that we were under insurrection to try to overthrow the government. Now, that's a little dangerous in and of itself because obviously there are legitimate reasons to try to overthrow a tyrannical government, which it did not point out. But the 2006 reforms basically threw out any concern about dictatorial abuses. Section 1076 of the Defense Authorization Act, the other one which you mentioned, changed the name of the key provision in the statute book from Insurrection Act to Enforcement of the Laws to Restore Public Order Act. Now, isn't that interesting? And what's in that act? The new law expands the list of pretexts to include, now these are pretexts to use martial law, natural disasters, epidemic, serious public health emergency, terrorist attack or incident, or other conditions. Can you believe that, Dr. Stan?
Well, I can believe
having
that.
Having a statement like other conditions. Other can mean virtually anything. Talk about unlimited lawmaking power in that act. And you notice that this was missed because the Defense Authorization Act didn't do it. It simply pointed you to the Enforcement of Laws to Respect Public Order Act, which didn't get any press at all. And if you look inside that, you see that you have these other conditions. In other words, they have a wide-open blank check. They can declare martial law for any reason they want.
Well, you know, Joel, I think that most Americans say, well, we would never have a dictatorship in America. Our leaders would never do that. And I would like to suggest that they really don't understand. We have leaders who have a far different worldview. We have a small clique that runs both political parties, is simply financing and bringing dictatorships into power throughout the world. And time again, if you study what's happened over this last 50 years, you'll find that the American State Department has installed communist dictators, exactly as we did in Zimbabwe, where they're having 150,000% inflation a year there. We put Mugabe in place, American State Department did, because they have no respect for individual liberty, and if those people are willing to do that in other countries, why wouldn't they be willing to do it here? And if God is just, why would he possibly prevent them from doing it?
Well, I think God is just, but in the long term, and he has to allow a lot of evil to occur just so as to judge the world and the people that are involved, and obviously, we have our free agency to perceive evil going about, and we, you know, the American people in general are asleep at the switch. And a lot of that is because those that they rely upon, the experts, have all the financial inducement not to rock the boat and to not declare that the emperor has no clothes. You know, one might think, given the experience of the U.S. Patriot Act and its many other power abuses, Congress would be leery about giving this president this kind of a blank check. another blank check yet to suspend the Constitution. But that, of course, is pretty naive. The new law was put in place in response to, you know, Hurricane Katrina. And there was no evidence that permitting a president far more executive power would avoid future debacles, especially when they're natural disasters in origin. But such a law provides, you know, a comfort blanket to politicians because the risk of tyranny is irrelevant compared to the reduction of risk of embarrassment to politicians if anything goes wrong and they don't have enough power to control it. And that's one of the things that keeps allowing Congress to give the president more power. It shields them from criticism as well. They can point the finger at the president and say, look, we gave you the power and you didn't do anything. But, you know, the new law also empowers the president to commandeer the National Guard of one state to send to another state for as many as 365 days or a year.
But, of course, without the permission of the state governor, that is the frightening thing.
Exactly. A governor's control of the National Guard could be trumped with a simple presidential declaration, and every governor in the country opposed these changes. Senator Patrick Leahy, you know, he at least rhetorically gives opposition to these things. Ranking Democrat of the Senate Judiciary Committee said last September, we certainly do not need to make it easier for presidents to declare martial law. Using the military for law enforcement goes against one of the founding tenets of our democracy. Of course, it isn't a democracy. That's part of the problem, is that we've lost our way in that regard. But, you know, martial law really means obey soldiers' commands or be shot. Abuses of military rule in the southern states during the Reconstruction era, you know, are legendary for any of those who have read any of the history. But they've been swept under the historical rug, so to speak. The Enabling Act legislation to the military commissions and other things that I've referred to as the martial law acts, you know, it purports to preserve law and order while formally empowering the president to rule by decree. So Bush can commandeer a state's National Guard anytime he declares a state has refused to enforce applicable law. Now, listen to this wordage. That's disturbing as more and more federal laws become unjust. This undermines, for example, a local sheriff's constitutional right to refuse to cooperate with federal law enforcement within his jurisdiction because he could be ruled as refusing to enforce applicable law, which is his right to do so. But now they've taken away that right in this legislation, in the Enabling Act. So there's lots of little things that have gone on that have not been reported even in the conservative press. Now, you know, there's even the issue about laws that are commonly understood, but laws which Bush, quote, fixes with a signing statement. In other words, you'd obey the law or you'd obey Bush's signing statement, which basically says that a law has a different meaning to the federal government. And if you disagree with that as a state, Bush now has the power to come in and use martial law if you refuse to enforce his interpretation of the law.
And I think that the average citizen has no concept at all of what's going on, or the fact that every state governor opposed this idea that the president could commandeer their martial law and use Americans against Americans. And, of course, soldiers are taught to do one thing. They're taught to kill. They are not trained for police crowd control. They're trained to kill. That's what they do. And you're given orders to kill, you kill. We see this happening over in Iraq today when lots of times soldiers are told to kill and they go ahead and do it. You know,
that's because they're improperly trained and they follow orders.
Right, and that's the whole thing. I mean, you're given an order, you're expected to, you know, to carry out that order, even though it goes against everything you believe.
Well, I mean, and then you look at the torture memorandums, and soldiers are being told things are legal if they try to say this is not a lawful order, and the Department of Justice and the Pentagon lawyers come down and say, yes, it is lawful. What are they left to do? You see, we've lost the concept of being able to have certain things that are above the interpretation of lawyers that, and courts that will protect a soldier who goes against those things. And we've lost that in this government. You know, from the Pentagon's use of the total information surveillance system to spy planes during the Washington area sniper shootings and the Pentagon's seizure of Americans' financial and private information without a warrant, the Bush administration, of course, has not hesitated to use military force and intimidation at home whenever it's convenient. And Americans, you know, may have little or no idea how far the military has actually gone on the home front because of the Bush administration's obsessive secrecy. And, you know, the Pentagon has sent U.S. military intelligence agents on domestic fishing expeditions. They've spied and kept records on dissident groups. In 2004, two Army intelligence agents descended on the University of Texas Law School in Austin. They entered the office of the Journal of Women and Law and demanded the editors turn over a roster of the people who attended a recent conference on Islam and women. The editors denied having a list. But the behavior of one of the agents is darn right intimidating, she said. And military officials later declared that U.S. Army intelligence had overstepped its bounds, but this did not stop the Bush administration from having a provision inserted in the bill, passed in secret session of the Senate Intelligence Committee, that would allow military intelligence agents to conduct surveillance and recruit informants in the United States without telling the American people anything about it.
And I think really what's frightening, Joel, is they are recruiting informants to spy on other Americans, just like they did in Hitler's Germany or Mao's China or Stalin's Russia. And they are recruiting informants to, you know, pretend to be just regular people, but of course we keep turning in reports.
And well, it's worse than just informants. These really are agent provocateurs as well. We know from all of the Muslim or Islamic radicals that have been prosecuted under Attorney General Ashcroft and then Gonzalez, that every one of the main witnesses was not only an informant, but was someone who taught them how and induced them and provided the explosives material or the handling of weapons. All of those things were done by agent provocateurs financed by our own federal government. So these are more than just informants. Informants is meant to disarm the public into thinking that this is a legitimate exercise in state police powers, and it is not.
And, of course, I think that recently, within this last week, why, of course, the government lost another case against these six men. You remember we heard they were going to blow up the Sears Tower several Muslims. It turned out, of course, this was all a plan that was made by the government. The government was the one who was behind this whole plan. They were offering these Muslims $50,000 to join and to go along with it. And, of course, a lot of them, they never should have. They never should have agreed. But there would have been no plot to blow up the Sears Tower if it had not been suggested by the government agent who had infiltrated the Muslim group. And so you never really know who you can trust anymore. If whatever a person says, he could very well be a government agent trying to entrap you, so you have to be very careful what you say today, especially if you're a Muslim.
Well, you know, and with all of these illegal acts by the Bush administration, nothing's worse than the immunity they're trying to grant to all of the companies that are in bed with them in this, which I'll discuss, I guess, after the break. Right here.
All right. In fact, I think the other interesting thing was the Military Commission Act gave retro, immunity to all the people who were involved in torture.
Yes.
I don't know how many people have read the Military Commission Act, but if you were involved in torturing people, why, of course, you had retroactive immunity. You could not be tried for doing the horrible things or torturing people to death. After all, retroactively, you'd been, allowed to do it by the Military Commission Act. But there's not one person in America, probably in 1,000, who has any idea what's in that legislation. Well, Joel, you've got 3 minutes to go ahead and wrap up the program.
Well, we're talking about Ron Paul having the courage in Congress last month to really give a strong challenge to the amendments to the 1978 Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, the FISA Act. He said, you know, when you finally read this thing, it extends immunity from prosecuting not only the telecoms of civil action, but to anyone, any communication service provider who has access to wire electronic communications, any parent, subsidiary, affiliate, successor, assignee of such companies, any officer, employee, or agents of such companies, any landlord, custodian, another person who may be authorized or required to furnish assistance. The Senate version, he says, goes even further by granting retroactive immunity to such entities that may have broken the law in the past. So this goes way, way back. And that's in there specifically because Ma Bell and the other telephone companies and their subsidiaries were doing warrantless surveillance of American people clear back after World War II and been going on continuously without warrants. They only go to the FISA court to get a warrant when they have to go to trial on something. Well, the new FISA bill, according to Congressman Paul, allows the federal government to compel many more types of companies and individuals to grant the government access to communications without a warrant. The provisions of this legislation, supposedly designed to protect Americans from warrantless surveillance, are full of loopholes and ambiguities. There's no blanket prohibition against listening in on all American citizens without a warrant. So, he's doing his job of being the watchdog in Congress for everyone. He brings up the most interesting thing at the end, though. He says that if these companies were told that what they were being compelled to do was legal, then why is it necessary to grant them immunity?
Very, very good point. Well, that's the trouble with Ron Paul. He's always so logical. And most of the things that go on in Washington, D.C. are totally illogical. For instance, the whole idea that we're so concerned about people's health and tobacco, it kills people. Tobacco smoke creates cancer, so we subsidize the tobacco growing. I mean, how can you have it both ways? And yet, of course, for many years, this was the official policy. On one hand, we were pointing out the dangers of tobacco. On the other hand, we were subsidizing its protection. Well, we're just about out of time, Joel. It's always a pleasure to have you with us here, and thank you so very much. We'll look forward to having you with us again. I guess you're going to be with us tomorrow morning, aren't you?
That's right. All right. Pleasure, Dr. Stan.
God bless, and thanks so very much. Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, that was Joel Skousen, and certainly hope you enjoy his commentary. I know I do, and we hope that many of you out there will want to get the World Affairs Brief. It's a wonderful source of interpretation of what's really going on in the world. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we do hope that you've enjoyed our conversation, our weekly conversation with Joel Skousen here. I think it's vitally important that you get a different commentary, because you have to understand the media is largely controlled. I mean, certainly 90 to 95% of the major media outlets in America are there simply to give you pablum, never to discuss the real issues, or if they do, they get two people who play a game there, like Abbott and Costello, or Laurel and Hardy, and they pretend to be arguing back and forth. They're really not. They're to confuse you. The book was written, The New Media Monopoly, by Professor Ben Bagdikian up at the University of California, pointing that 90 to 95% of the major media outlets in the United States are owned by five mega corporations that make mockery of the concept of freedom of the press. And time and again, stories, of course, are totally suppressed. One of the stories would be how the government killed Martin Luther King. If you doubt that, there's a wonderful book. It's called An Act of State. It's written by Mr. William Pepper, who represented the King family in the trial, where, of course, they were putting the government, for all intents and purposes, on trial, along with Lloyd Jowers, who had been given $100,000 to allow his place, his bar, Jim's Bar, right across the street from the Lorraine Hotel there, in Memphis, Tennessee. His place was where they planned the assassination. Had nothing to do with James Earl Ray. He was a patsy. They sent an innocent man to jail. They knew he was an innocent man. And the judicial system was rigged. The story is told in a book called An Act of State. Have you ever heard about the trial? Of course not. It was held in 1999, totally blacked out by the media. We have freedom of the press. That means if you own the press, you have the freedom to suppress the information. I just thank the good Lord that we have an opportunity to be on stations around the country where most of them we have to buy time, because we want to get the truth out about what's really going on. If you've not seen my talk, it's on DVD. It's called The Coming Police State, or The Planned Police State. You need to get it, and you need specifically to get the syllabus that goes with that, because it will give you the information, give you the documentation, give you the background. Many times our senators have been concerned about what's going on, and you will never, never, never hear what they say, totally blocked out by the controlled media. You need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, to find out why the Supreme Court took God and prayer out of our schools. And they did it because the Masons controlled the United States Supreme Court between 1941 and 1971 in majorities of 5-4 to 8-1. And the Masons worship a different God. And this is all about spiritual issues. They worship the great architect of the universe. And they believe when they die, they'll stand before the great white throne of judgment. But if you look that up in your Bible, you'll find out that the great white throne of judgment is the judgment of the damned. And yet there's not one person, one Mason in a million, who really understands that the great white throne of judgment is a judgment from which, is the throne from which there is no escape. You are going to spend eternity in hell. But of course, these were the people working on our Supreme Court who wanted to destroy the Christian foundation of our country. They have. So you need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. If you want to verify the material, we'll be glad to send you information off the internet, or you can get the book behind the lodge door. Unholy Alliance will verify what I'm telling you. But you can check it out on the internet. And the Masons did control our United States Supreme Court. Why doesn't anybody tell you that? Well, you're not supposed to understand these things. You're just to go along. You need to get the video, The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning, because there were not only Christians here, but there were people from occult secret societies working at the highest level of our government. Of course, to one day have America lead the world into the New World Order to create an American empire, and as we have today, troops stationed in the 130 nations. Well, we're just about out of time here. This is the time when I need to give you our telephone number. It's 1-800-544-8927. Again, my talk on The Forbidden Secret is important. The book, Brotherhood of Darkness. And, of course, my talk on the Poland Police State. And with the syllabus that goes with us, please pray for America. Pray for revival. But pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and for our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.